Hello and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name is Alex Gamsik and I'm the founder of Honest Politics LLC. My company does high-level political consulting, but not for politicians. My services are for everyday Americans just like you and me. So today I want to go over a personal project of mine, clarifying personal project, not the business, not my actual employment. All right. So it's going to be a revision of the Constitution, which is something I've been thinking over for 8 or 9 years, ever since I read a book by Larry Sabato called A More Perfect Constitution, which called for a second constitutional convention to update our constitution to fit modern times and to correct the oversights or mistakes or just things that have changed since the founders created the constitution in 1790 or thereabouts. So I'm going to go through the beginning of my revisions. I actually have 27 amendments in total, which turned out kind of well because there's currently 27 amendments. Anyway, this constitutional convention would be a gathering of public policy professionals, politicians, business leaders, leaders in the sciences and the arts, basically everyone important in America, plus I'm hoping some of the public would participate, free from financial influence, and contribute to a more perfect constitution that is updated for modern times. So I'm going to go through each of the amendments, and they're in sections, big blocks. So the first section is qualifications and conditions for elected officials. Basically, I'm changing the way we choose our congresspeople and president and Supreme Court people and other court people too, I guess you count. So first, you have to have stronger state residency requirements for congresspeople. That means you can't just pull a Hillary Clinton and decide you want to be a New York senator, so you move to New York the year before you become a senator of that state. What I proposed is that you have to be in your state, I think, for a congressperson, I made it 3 years, and if you are trying to get to the Senate, then it has to be 5 years. So yeah, you have to actually live in the state for a few years, and I'm definitely open to revising this. If you guys have comments or questions, email alex@honestpoliticsllc. If you send an audio file, you'll be on the podcast, and I'd love to hear your perspective. So revising the requirements to be president, because why does the location of the mother giving birth to a child dictate whether that child can be the president of the United States? The duality I pointed out was myself and Ted Cruz. If you look at myself, I was born in Georgia, the country, which is not the state, the country. And I cannot be president, even though I've lived in this country since I was 30 days old or so. And Ted Cruz was born in Canada, so he is also not likely to be president, right? Wrong. Because his biological parents are American. My adoptive parents are American. We were both raised our entire lives in this country, and we both have parents who were Americans their entire lives. Why does he get to be president and I can't? It's just like completely ridiculous. So what I said is that you have to be a U.S. citizen and primary resident of the United States for 35 continuous years. And of course, you can still go on vacation and stuff, but basically, you have to live here for 35 continuous years as a citizen with no alternative citizenship. Also, interestingly, I added a provision which will work with a later provision, abolishing the Electoral College. This one says you have to spend at least 72 hours in every state within 1 year of the election. So basically, in order to be elected president of the United States, a presidential candidate would have to visit every state in the union for at least 3 days. Now, that will be explained later as to why it's important, because it takes away from the major disadvantage of the Electoral College. Many people think you take away the Electoral College, congratulations, the president will just campaign in New York City and Los Angeles and call it a day. But if you add this provision, they will have to go to every state. And if they have to go to every state, they will absorb the culture, they will absorb the thoughts of the residents, and they will be much more representative of everyone. Some people might think, you know, you can't have a president, you know, fly to every country. That's not fair. That's very expensive. And to that I say, first of all, they're not flying to countries. I misspoke. And then second of all, They can afford it because Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in 2016 each raised about $1 billion. So if they can't afford some airfare, that's their problem at that point. Anyway, so you have to visit all the states to be president because you should probably know what it's like to be in all 50 states of the 50 states you are president of. And now we're going to take a quick commercial break. Okay, so we'll move on to financial transparency and independence. This is a bit of a long one, and it's kind of complicated, but bear with me. Public officials must show the public 7 years' worth of tax returns and divest from significant foreign streams of revenue. Presidents, senators, congressmen, and federal judges must divest from all streams of active revenue other than their public speaking fees and published writings and the salaries they get as congresspeople and all that. They will retain equity in a passive position only. These representatives will receive a stipend from the Treasury equal to 3/4 of their previous salary for 10 years once they leave office. And they're forbidden from receiving other revenue once leaving office, except for their published writings and public speaking fees for 10 years after leaving office. So this is a complicated provision, but it does three things. It makes candidates more open in their finances so that we know if they have foreign or undue influences. It also makes it so that while they're in office, they are not profiteering off of anything. And then lastly, once they leave office, they will not be profiteering either. So it's basically an anti-corruption measure that greatly limits the salaries or the quote perks you get when you're a politician, so that you won't be listening to special interests or people who are promising you or your, you know, family members jobs. This is going to be more transparency and more financial independence. So let's go over it a little bit. If you tried to do term limits, there's a big reason I didn't do term limits here. A term limited congressman, say you limit them to 4 years in office. What are they going to do during those 4 years? Well, the first 2 years, they're going to try to get reelected like usual. The next 2 years, they're not going to get reelected. So what are they going to focus on? Not the public good, silly. They're going to look for how they can get a job after they leave office. And the best way to get a job after you leave office is to go to company name redacted for legal reasons or one of these companies and say, hey, I can help you out if you can help me out later. So that's basically what they do. And studies show that happens. If you term limit somebody, they will focus on what they will do after office instead of trying to get reelected. And that creates corruption, basically. So that's why I'm saying you should probably pay them a stipend after they leave so that they're not trying to get money from undue sources. But you can also ban them from getting extra money because we all know sometimes that 3/4 of your salary is not going to hold you over. I do leave an exception for published writings and public speaking fees because as long as they're not doing it behind closed doors, they have a lot to offer in terms of their experience as former congresspeople, their experience as former presidents, and they can enlighten the public on a lot of issues. So that's why that's there. The foreign revenue thing's pretty obvious. You don't want people influenced by foreign governments or foreign actors. I also made it pretty harsh. I said they can only have equity in a passive position. That means if you got stocks, you can keep them. You just can't sell them. You can't start doing short contracts and all this weird mumbo jumbo. You just kind of, you know, you're not in it for the money. You're in it for the public service. So that is the first section. I guess I'll talk quickly about the term limits part. I mean, the time limits on nominations, appointments, and confirmations, even though that kind of doesn't fit in here. Unfortunately, most of the provisions in the Constitution do not have time limits, which means that Mitch McConnell can block Merrick Garland from being nominated to the Supreme Court just by refusing to do something that the Constitution says he should probably do. This basically says presidential nominations to the Supreme Court or any office have to happen within 30 days, and the Senate has to vote on it within 60 days. If the Senate rejects that nominee, then the president has to replace it within 30 days. So it's basically a 30-day, 60-day cycle. So the within 90 days of a vacancy, there will either be a replacement or the Senate will have rejected that replacement and the cycle will continue. That makes it so that for political reasons, you can't just hold up important court seats. You can't just gum up the works by holding bureaucratic nominations hostage, because we shouldn't be having acting individuals in charge of important positions within the federal government. It's also really crazy how important leadership within the bureaucracy of the federal government, like the leader of NASA or the leader of the Fish and Wildlife Service or Social Security Administration professionals, are put in as acting individuals for basically a permanent basis by the president without the Senate acting on them or confirming them. It's a huge workaround to the intent of the Constitution, and given the size and scope of the federal government right now, it doesn't make sense that there aren't time limits to make sure that these positions get filled quickly and promptly so that we have like professionals who are vetted not just by the president, but by the Senate. So I hope you enjoyed listening to a few of these and their justifications. Let me know if you have any suggestions. Email alex@honestpoliticsllc.com. The next section I'm going to do is a more representative government. I'll release that podcast at a later date. Until then, I hope you have a great day as we seek to discover more of the stories behind the statistics.